Now here's a war cry to make our enemies tremble in fear.
Our determination is that, as you know very well, we can defend against ISIL and al-Nusra under the 2001 AUMF. And if our forces are attacked by the regime in a particular circumstances, the president could exercise his Article 2 rights under the Constitution.
Article 2 rights, man, they're scared over there in Syria. That's Christine Warmoth, Undersecretary of Defense for Policy on Capitol Hill, describing the various authorizations the administration believes it has to use force in Syria. Well, Democratic Senator Tim Kaine is tired of the acronyms and foggy mission statements from the Obama administration regarding the situation in Syria, and he wants a new strategy, humanitarian or safe zones for opposition fighters within the country as refugees pour into the U.S. and Europe. And the senator is here to discuss it further. Senator Tim Kaine, Democrat from Virginia, welcome to The Takeaway.
Hey, John, great to be with you.
What would it take to make these safe zones, and where would they be?
John, what you would need to do, and I don't underestimate the challenge of doing it, but I think it's the best alternative, is you would need to take area that the anti-Assad and anti-ISIL forces have been able to clear in northern Syria and try to extend that, protect it militarily, largely through a no-fly zone, but then use the combined weight of the nations of the world and international NGOs to provide food, medical care, and basic necessities of life in northern Syria along the Turkish border. I wasn't initially a supporter, but after I was over in the region in February of 2014 and saw the number of refugees pouring into Lebanon and Jordan, I have been urging the administration to consider this. Most recently, Senators McCain, Graham, Durbin, and I wrote the administration earlier this year to say this was going to be preferable to the escalating millions of people who are leaving Syria and pouring into neighboring countries and now spreading out across Europe.
Well, here's Senator John McCain posing that question at a Senate Armed Services Committee hearing last week, and it doesn't sound like the Pentagon wants to go there.
Would you support a buffer zone which would then protect some of these refugees who are being barrel-bombed and slaughtered by Bashar Assad?
I don't see the force available to be able to protect them currently, sir, so I would not recommend it at this point.
We don't have the troops over there, so you want an escalation to get to that point. How many boots on the ground are we talking about here?
Well, we do have partners, John. The important thing is Turkey has been asking us to do this with them for quite a while, and other nations in the region, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, and others have indicated that as well. My sense is this is something that could be done with U.S. Air cover and troops from other nations that are in the region. Because those are the nations that are most affected by this massive humanitarian crisis. If we're going to try to arrest this flow, we need to do something where people will feel safe to go home. And I was with Syrian refugees in Gaziantep, Turkey, about 2 months ago, and many of them want to go back and will go back if they can be in a place where their safety is secure.
Well, I'm trying to put myself into the mind of one of those refugees in Gaziantep, Turkey, and I have a hard time distinguishing between a better life in some crowded safe zone that's not actually my home, which may be a place that I'm stuck for years and years and years, versus the same kind of situation in Lebanon or Turkey, versus throwing the dice and seeing if I can't find a decent life, just basically give up on Syria and move to Germany or Sweden or maybe even Los Angeles.
John, I think the purpose of the humanitarian safe zone is not to say that somebody in Syria couldn't seek refuge elsewhere, but so the idea is you don't do this and then block people from leaving, but it's to give people the option of staying in their country in a place that's safer. And I am convinced that many Syrians would take that. And again, most recently in Gaziantep, a city that's right near the Turkish-Syrian border that has huge numbers of Syrian refugees, there's a deep desire to go back. Actually, a lot of folks cross the border already. It's a dangerous border crossing. They're trying to establish town councils in areas that are safe and participate in what they hope will be the next chapter of a better next chapter of life in Syria. And they feel like they can contribute to that more if they are in their country in a safe place than if they're hundreds or thousands of miles away.
It seems to me a safe zone strategy is essentially a surrender to ISIS, basically saying, okay, you guys stay over there. We won't bother you. You just don't bother us over here in these safe zones. It sounds like partition of Syria, surrender to ISIS, and we're done.
Well, you led into the intro with the testimony from the recent Armed Services Committee hearing. I think the Obama administration's legal rationale for the war against ISIS is very flimsy. I actually do believe that U.S. military should be used against ISIS. I just don't think it should be used against ISIS without a vote of Congress. But I would envision the safe zone as a humanitarian zone. If you are fleeing ISIS, if you are fleeing al-Nusra, if you are fleeing Bashar al-Assad, if you're fleeing hunger, if you're fleeing cholera, you can come there, and with the support of the NGO community, basic life necessities will be met. But outside of that safe zone, we will continue to work together with partners against ISIS. We've had some success in Syria in the north. That's going to go on. So no, there's not going to be a backing off of the battle against ISIL. We'll need to protect people in the safe zone from ISIL.
Senator Tim Kaine, I've got two questions just because they're in the national conversation right now. You can choose how you want to answer them. Would you be comfortable with a Muslim being president of the United States?
Absolutely. There's a constitutional provision that says there's not a religious test for public office in the United States. And
could a Muslim be elected president in 2016?
Well, given that there's no Muslim running for president that I know of in 2016, I think that's unlikely. But
that's the easy way out of the question. That's good. That's right.
but we're a diverse, we are a very diverse nation, and I see it in my home state of Virginia all the time. You know, look, it would be a challenging thing now were a Muslim to run, just like when the first Catholic was nominated for President, Al Smith, in the late 1920s. It was very challenging for him, and he didn't win. Now that there would be a Catholic nominee is not something that it would be controversial at all. I'm aware of this history because I'm Catholic, and that makes this week exciting because we're waiting for the Pope to come. I'm assuming there probably will be a Muslim candidate for president one day, and the first one will probably face an uphill battle. But then, you know, the second candidate, it will not be much of an issue.
Senator Tim Kaine, Democrat from Virginia, thanks so much.
Okay, thanks, John.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.